Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Legal matters. Nene Ntabiseng is in studio with us. A very good evening, Ntabiseng.
Good evening, Osphimela. How are you?
Well, there's lots to talk about that we didn't get to with the last time you and I spoke, that you've put on the table. So we're going to start with racial harassment in the workplace.
Yes.
Which is very, very tricky to deal with.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the case you're looking at.
All right. So in this particular case, fortunately, it wasn't so difficult to deal with. So the employees were waiting for a bus that was going to pick them up at a certain point and then taking them to another point. And whilst they're waiting, when the bus or the vehicle that was going to pick them up arrived, there was shoving that was happening. As a result, our guy then bumped or pushed a white person. And then he apologized, saying, sorry, man, I was pushed by the people behind me. It was not my intention to push you. Mm-hmm. And then the response that came was that of him being called the K word. Mm-hmm. And all sorts of racial slurs. Mm. As a result, what he did, the complainant, he then went and opened a criminal charge.
The complainant is the black guy.
Is the black guy. He then went to go open a criminal charge. His name is Mr. Ntoto. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He then went to go open a criminal charge against him. And the white person was then found guilty. And he was sentenced to 6 months or 5,000 rand, a fine of 5,000 rand, which obviously he paid the fine of 5,000 rand. Whilst the criminal matter was happening, he then opened an internal one at the workplace, a complaint.
This is the same person.
Correct. For discrimination in the workplace. So this is now in terms of the Employment Equity Act.
So this was a colleague.
This was a colleague.
All right.
Yes. And then the bosses kept pending it and pending it and pending it. Eventually, he was found guilty in the criminal charge. Mm. But in the office, nothing was
dealt with.
There was an excuse that, no, wait, he's on annual leave. Then he would come back, oh, no, wait, there's sick leave. And then it was December holidays, and then it just kept going and going and going, and nothing was happening. So he then referred the matter straight to the CCMA without there being any internal process to say that I started the internal process, and this is the proof that I have. Email being sent, follow-up being sent, but nothing has happened. And therefore, I'm here at the CCMA to say that this man contravened the Employment Equity Act, and therefore the company should also be held liable for its failure to deal with him in the manner in which he spoke to me. And then the company said, no, we're not going to be held liable for that, because the commission actually agreed with him to say, yes, the company actually contravened the Employment Equity Act by failing to deal with this matter internally. And the commissioner actually granted our complainant, the black guy, 100,000 rand as compensation.
What then happens in the company that didn't want to deal with that? Now that the commissioner has awarded the 100,000 rand, how does that affect the dynamics in the business and the company?
It was actually in the review, when it went on review in the labor court, that's what the company was dealing with. And our guy, Mr. Njuju, in his papers said the work environment had become so hostile because now he spoke up not only against a white person, but a white person who's in senior management. Mm. So the workplace was just treating him completely differently. And when the CCMA was on his side, the company went a step further to just alienate him. Mm. And then when it went on review to review the award, and then the labor court was actually in agreement with the CCMA, the company just basically did not understand what is happening. Because what they were saying is that they cannot be held vicariously liable for this particular employee's actions because they do not resemble, or he was not carrying out his duties as an employee. But with looking at the criminal case itself, which has already convicted him, there's more than enough proof to show that, one, it was during work hours. Two, he was in the process of actually conducting work for you. And as an individual with so many cases, I think we've spoken about this so many times, that you are a representative of your company, even if it's outside of working hours. Now, it's even worse when it's during work hours.
So your advice, I mean, this is your client?
No, it was another matter.
Another, okay.
Yeah.
So going forward, now that he's been awarded the 100,000 rand, he won the criminal case, the CCMA agreed with him.
Yes.
He still has to remain in the business.
So he is in the business. Last I checked, from what I can see in the judgment, he never resigned. Mm. He's still in the business. But now he's in the business in a different platform now.
And that's the question I was going to ask you. What recourse then does he, you know, how does he, they cannot be forced to handle the matter better.
Yes.
Is there anything else he can do?
So what the company can do is to make sure that when they probably walk around eggshells around him, to be sure that they don't deal with the same situation ever again, wherein there is such slurs or any sort of slur that is handled to any person in that particular company. That's the first thing. But as for the work relationship between him and the company, I think that's something that the company and him would have to decide how best they're going to deal with it. If he insists on staying and working there, that's his choice. He will have to deal with the consequences of his actions, be it that he was actually defending himself, which is right, what he did, and he's actually given us precedent on how to deal with racial issues in the workplace. And it's also a nice precedent to say that employers should not take these things lightly, because sometimes employers are like, but it's between the two employees, it has nothing to do with us. This case now says that if it was during working hours in your premises, in your area, you as the employer can be held vicariously liable.
This money that was awarded to him,
yes,
is paid by the company.
Correct. Correct.
And would it have been more? Is this the maximum that the company would have had to pay legally?
I do not think that he actually prayed for any monies that's supposed to be due to him. He just wanted the acknowledgement that the Employment Equity Act was broken by the employer by not handling the internal dismissal process. But the CCMA has a threshold of not giving over, I think, over 200,000. Mm. So it was right there in the middle.
And the reason I ask you this is that one wonders whether there would be a consideration as to whether the business is small or big, because this could happen even for someone running a small business.
Yes.
You know, you may be running a small business and sometimes this is not the kind of thing you want to handle.
Mm.
You've got other problems, you know, you want to handle other matters, but if this kind of thing comes to your doorstep, you may be liable for not handling it.
Correct.
And have to pay now more money
out
of the pocket of the business to something that you could have handled.
Yes. So the moral of the story, do not ignore issues such as this, because clearly now they can come and bite very, very hard.
Okay. We take your calls and your questions to Tabi Singh. This is, you know, just how we opened it, but you can ask any legal question, 086-000-959. You can also send voice notes as well on 063-688-0959. You've got a medical negligence case as well.
Yes. So, a cyclist, he does this for a living, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it was for a living, or it was for, it was recreational, like you're going to run marathons and what, it was his thing. So, he had an issue with his ankle, and then he goes to see a Dr. Crane. And then when he gets to Dr. Crane, he explains what the issue is. Dr. Crane says, okay, we need to have an operation just to fix your ankle. When he goes in, he goes in deeper than he was supposed to. And then when he comes out and the healing process starts, this poor man realizes, no, not only can I not cycle anymore, but actually I can't even walk properly anymore. What happened? And then now the doctor has to explain what it is that they went deeper than they were supposed to do, because they were just only supposed to put the bone back to where it was. It had shifted. It couldn't go back by just pushing it on top of the skin. So they had to just operate it and just put it back where it belongs. It was completely removed. The ligament was also dealt with. It was a whole whole situation. So now, as somebody who cycles and wants to do the marathons that they do, I think he was preparing for Tour de France, if I'm not mistaken. Now he can't go. He's got a limp, he can't walk properly, and he can't cycle. So now he sues the doctor. The doctor says, no, but I did my due diligence. I made sure that I removed the bone that was giving issues. No, but the instruction was, do this. And on the medical records, was there any cause for you to go any deeper than what your client or the patient required? And in the report, there was no reason.
I'm horrified.
Yeah.
So to prove that, would they have to get another doctor to assess?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So what would happen is that he would get his medical records and then go to another doctor for the doctor to assess the medical records and look at the injury or the operation and see whether or not in that second doctor's opinion, what was done by the first doctor was necessary or not. And then if necessary, if the money is there, go to a third doctor just to have three different opinions. And if the third doctor agrees with the first and second doctor, then you don't have a case. But if the two other doctors disagree completely with the doctor that actually conducted the operation, then it is deemed that you were negligent as a doctor, you exceeded your mandate and you did not listen to instruction. Therefore, you are liable because this person now has a disability as a result of your negligent work.
Would it have been because they wanted to charge more?
Most likely. Even though they never put it in the paperwork to say that they wanted to charge more, perhaps this particular person had medical aid and they wanted to get the maximum amount out of the medical aid. Now the hospital and the doctor and the hospital, the doctor and the Minister of Health usually get sued together in such papers. And then now they were liable, I think for this one it was about 1.5 million.
How easy is it to get those medical records? Because my experience is that people do struggle to get the hospitals to agree to hand over the medical records.
Because it's your personal information, it should not be a problem, but you are very correct.
Yeah.
Especially in public hospitals, it's even worse. The file disappears, the doctor is not available to sign it out. Mm. So you end up making a court application to compel the hospital to provide you with the medical information. So now when you eventually have that medical report and the file, when you sue them, you include the legal action that you did to compel them to give you your file. Because, I mean, it's mine. Why are you refusing with my information? It's a different story when it's Ospumelo now asking for my information. You need my consent for that. So if the attorney is the one on behalf of their client saying we request this, there has to be a power of attorney that is signed by the client to confirm that they're giving this attorney instruction to go and collect the file, and then they can start the legal process. Even that on its own is quite problematic.
Tell me something, we've got Freddie on the line who's in Soweto. Freddie, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, ma'am. Good evening to Tabisin as well.
Good evening.
So I just wanted to find out about something then, because then recently we got a problem, I think, that I've encountered, whereby the company is being said like it's under administration.
Okay.
And then you haven't found that people, they've been let go. I think there have been cases that have been pending on CCMA cases, on CCMA. And then they couldn't get to carry on with those cases on the basis that the company is under administration. So therefore, in that case, like maybe those cases, they've been halted up at the CCMA. They've been halted, those cases, then in fact, they dismissed. And then instead of the case to be heard on the CCMA level, they went to the point of halting them up because they stopped them on the basis that they said the company's under administration. In that case, what would be the advice to the people? Because there are certain people that I happen to know that are affected by this, by such things.
I don't think I understand when you mean that they were halted.
No, what I'm saying is that, like, say, for instance, the company has dismissed the people.
Yes.
And then when they dismiss the people, and then they
refer the matter to the CCMA.
Then the main cases were referred to the CCMA.
Yeah.
At the CCMA, then the company wrote to CCMA that we are currently under administration.
Okay. Mm.
Therefore, the cases cannot be heard. Mm. So, then what would be the advice that you can give to the people that are affected by such things? Yeah, because like at this point in time, like you felt that this injustice that has happened, because if indeed maybe there was something based, something tangible for that matter, you would have proceeded as well to the CCMA.
Can I ask, Freddie, before we ask, can I ask if you think, do you think this issue of liquidation or an administration is legitimate?
It's an issue of administration, I believe.
And you think it was anyway going to be happening?
It happened, yes, that the company is under administration for that.
So what I just want to make sure that you don't think that it was convenient. That this company was struggling anyway.
It was struggling anyway. Right. But the fact of the matter is that, like instead of letting people go and then you opt for this dismissal because you know for the fact that when you go there, you're gonna be putting this. You're gonna hold the proceeding at the CCMA not to take place.
Okay.
On the basis that you know that you will be justifying that we are currently under
administration.
I understand. Yeah.
Administration.
I understand.
I'm just failing to understand. Did the commissioner communicate to the applicants, which is the employees we're referring to?
The commissioner communicated to the applicants to say your case cannot be heard because company has ruled that we are currently under administration.
But the referral was under unfair dismissal.
Yes.
Mm. But was it unfair dismissal in terms of Section 189?
Yes, they were under.
Oh, okay. In that case, then I get it. So the matter is pended. And then when did the company communicate when it is that they will be done with their rounding off of administration?
No, it was never. It was just to say, the company is under administration. It was never stated that maybe. After how long and what's no further communication. It's just to say state that until you are currently under administration, therefore the cases cannot be had, and then
If there's no, because usually what would happen is that the commissioner would request that if you are pending it, is it by agreement by both parties? That's how it usually should be done, right? Because let's say, for example, I come in on the matter as an attorney, and then I need to get appraised on the matter. We can agree with the opposing party, the employer, to say that can we postpone the matter, and then we do it by agreement, and then we send it to the commissioner. You can't, as one party, say I am not going to attend to this matter because I'm under administration. You still have to come and answer to the unfair dismissal, because it's not a one-sided thing. So the commissioner should be asked why it is that they're granting such a pending without there being giving the applicants an opportunity to reply to the request, because everybody has a right to reply. So it sounds like the applicants were denied a right to reply to the pending of this matter. It should have been that either one commissioner says that, okay, I've received your request to pend the matter. I will wait for the applicants to respond by, let's say, 3 days. And then after 3 days, I will make a decision on whether or not I will pend the matter. That's one. Or two, tell them, no, the matter has nothing to do with what you're currently doing. We are dealing with what you did in terms of Section 189, come and answer to it right now. So I don't understand how the commissioner made that decision without it being a consultative process between employer and applicant.
I hear you.
In
this case, say for instance that there was no communication that was shared, and then what would be the advice to a person.
Go to the chief commissioner. So wherever go to the chief commissioner in that particular building with your case mm-hmm. number and inform that commissioner so and so made this ruling. We were not given a right to reply. We don't know why the matter is being pended. We either request the matter proceed before the current commissioner or it be moved from commissioner A to commissioner B so that we can be heard.
Oh, yes. I really thank you.
Freddie, can I ask how many people are these?
I think it might have attracted, I think, more than like five, I think into over 12 people, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a big enough number. That's a big enough number to get their
attention.
Yeah, I think it's a big enough number to get the attention of the commissioner.
Yeah.
And to do something about that, even as this administration process is happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Freddie, for all of that. We've got a voice note in Tabise.
Osimelo and your guest in the studio. Good evening. How do I prepare myself for a case? In 2018, I opened up a maintenance file for the father of my child. Unfortunately, 2 months later, after the maintenance has been granted, he resigned from work and stopped paying maintenance. And then later in the years, as he got work, he started paying, but then it was a request from me asking him to assist the school fees, so he paid money straight into school account. That has been happening ever since, but he has not been consistent in the contribution, and it also was not 50% or anywhere closer to helping 100% with the school fees. So I've been taking care of the kid 100% myself. So now in 2025, I have requested him to assist to settle the school bill and so that I can start preparing for high school for the boy. And then, but then he insisted that he cannot afford what I'm asking, which is 50% of the school fees and any other additional extramural activities and needs for the kid. Then he approached the court now to say that he is not in a position to contribute towards the maintenance. From my side, I'd like to find out, how do I prepare myself for the court sitting, which is going to be earlier in July? So what do I need to take with? What advice can you give me? Thank you very much. Okay. Have a good evening.
There would be a couple of things that would have to be taken. I'm just trying to see if we can't get on the line, because one of the things that would have to be dealt with is that once she's gone to the maintenance court, they can now, the two of them, come to a new agreement about how much to pay, which
correct.
I think is part of the problem here.
Yes.
She has identified a school. She wants 50%. I don't think the maintenance court ruled on the 50%. There was a particular amount, right?
Yes. Mm. So usually, from what I can gather, she never went to go to the court when he stopped paying the first time.
That's it.
Because the first thing that she should have done was go to the court and say he stopped paying, so that he can come back and say, I resigned.
Remember, she said he resigned.
Yes, but she never went back to the court.
Because
when he resigned, he stopped paying.
So what was supposed to happen is that she didn't have to just understand he resigned. She was supposed to go to say, I'm not sure of the reasons, but he says he's resigned.
Yes.
Oh, he no longer works,
yes.
But he has stopped has stopped making payment.
Yes. And then what would happen is that the maintenance officer would then be appointed to go and find out what's happening. And if they find out that he's no longer working, has there been any monies paid into his account, like pension funds, provident funds, whatever the case may be from his previous work, then they can garnish that amount, right? Failing which, then they would send him a subpoena.
So just before you proceed, if we go back a bit, what you're saying is that when the person stops working and they tell you, I can't pay, I've stopped working, or I have stopped paying maintenance because I'm now unemployed.
Mm.
It's not the prerogative of the mother to say, okay, I understand.
Mm.
What must happen, even though she understands, is to go to court.
Yes.
Okay.
And when, as the person who's lost your job, you're the one who's supposed to
explain.
Go to the maintenance officer and say, I don't have work anymore. I'm supposed to be paying X amount. I can't do it. Here's proof that I'm no longer employed.
So, two things should happen.
Yes.
While this other one, the receiver, goes to court, even the one who's supposed to pay is supposed to go to court.
Correct.
And say, I'm no longer employed.
Yes.
I am not going to be able to pay.
Yes.
Not tell necessarily just the mother,
yes.
but go to court too.
Yes, because okay. there's a court order that's in existence and you're now in contempt.
She's actually on the line.
Awesome.
Because I think we've got a few questions. Anonymous, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us directly so that we can get clarity on a few questions. Hello, and thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you very much for
asking. Are we right in assuming that when he stopped paying maintenance after his resignation, you did not go back to court and tell them he's not paying?
That's correct. Yeah, I didn't.
And he also didn't go to court to tell them he's not going to be able to pay, ne?
Yes,
okay.
He also did not.
All right. So with that, and then he got work however many years or months later, and then it's, you guys came to a agreement that he will pay X amount, right?
It really was not an agreement. Mm. It was him saying,
this is all I can afford.
Yeah.
Okay.
$1,000 is what I can pay you.
Okay.
Can I just ask you, Anonymous, was it not the same amount as the court had said he must pay?
No, it wasn't.
It was less.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. And then with that, still, you guys did not go to court to go deal with this issue?
Yes.
Okay. And now, fast forward to right now, he's now going to the court to say, listen, I can't afford the 50,000 rand or the school fees. It's the school fees that's
the
issue,
fees,
ne?
Mm.
Yeah.
And the court order, the original court order, did it include 50% school fees?
No.
Okay.
The original court order included just maintaining the well-being of the child. At that time, he was 6 years old.
Yes.
So it was not even close to 3,000 rand.
Ah, then you're fine. Okay, this is what you need to do. This is... Sorry?
No,
oh, okay. So this is what's going to happen. Now that he's going to court to go declare that he cannot afford to pay 50% of the school fees, the same way that you guys did in the beginning, wherein you're going to bring your 6 months bank statement, that's what's going to happen this time. So you need to prepare your 6 months bank statement. He needs to do the same. And then you need to also supply your pay slip. He also needs to supply his pay slip. You need to, for 6 months, by the way. And then you also need to produce your liabilities. He also needs to do same. And then you're going to exchange this bundle. So in other words, your information he gives, you give to him, and then he gives you that information. So you can see what he's alleging. And then he needs to prove to the court to say that I used to earn, for argument's sake, 50,000 rand when this order was granted. Now I'm earning 10,000 rand. The school fees yangwana is 15,000 rand, which is way above what I'm earning, and therefore I cannot pay. And then he needs to prove it to the court. And then your argument should be, the order that was granted was when the minor was not only young, but also in primary school. We are now going into high school. He cannot regress and say that he cannot pay X amount. Can we look at my income, his income, my liabilities, his liabilities, and then the court grant us an order that is going to be suitable for the kid, even if it doesn't end up being 50%, but it should be a significant amount more than what it is that he was paying already. So that is how you prepare for going to court. Prepare your 6 months everything. He must prepare his 6 months everything, and then it has to be presented before the maintenance officer. If the maintenance officer is not able to help you guys mediate under Section 6, then it is taken to the court in front of a magistrate for a Section 10 inquiry. This is now where it becomes a little more serious, because now he has to give evidence under oath. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
So tomorrow... tomorrow we... I think we are starting with a parenting plan as well.
In the children's court.
And
yeah.
was there a plan before? What was the current arrangement?
There was no arrangement.
All right.
It
Was it a sort of haphazard type thing?
Yeah. When he is available, he calls. When the child calls, he asks permission to see his father. I did not have a problem.
Yeah.
But then when the police office, one of the police officers said to me, when he dropped off the document, he said to me, you must consider approaching the children.
Yes.
And then fully
children's court parenting plan. Yeah. Okay.
What would you like to see happen? What would be ideal? And maybe not ideal. Let me put it this way, because that's what the court looks at. What would be for you in the best interest of the child?
Consistency.
Okay.
Here's the downside that I want to break to you, that if dad was not consistent before, it is highly unlikely that he will be consistent now. But if this parenting plan, which is going to happen, when this parenting plan is made in order of court, regardless of him being inconsistent, you cannot say no, because you will be breaking the court order and you will be in contempt of court. But in the inverse, him failing to do what is in the court order, calling, dropping off the child, coming to see the child, he's also in contempt of the same court order. So what I would advise is that as the social worker now starts getting involved, because this has to be done through the social worker appointed by the court. So what's going to happen is that once a social worker has made the report and made a suggestion on what the parenting plan should look like, in that order of court, request that the magistrate make it a part of the clauses that they put in there to say that failure by either party or either parent to adhere to the court order is a contempt of this order. So that Kausani, when he doesn't call, or he doesn't come pick up the baby, when you decide to go to the children's court to say, he is not doing this, and this weekend I am not around, and he's supposed to be picking up this child or talking to this child, what am I supposed to do? Then you are not going to be held to book to say that you are failing to adhere to the court order. It becomes complex, unfortunately, but that is the reality of a situation where the parents are not having a civil enough relationship to deal with the contact, caring contact of a child.
What's the relationship between the child and the father? You know why it's important? Because these are things you all have to consider. If the relationship between the father and the child is tricky, you know, what I mean by tricky is that the child goes there because you guys have a parenting plan, but you are left wondering if the child is okay. Because you would know your child. And maybe for whatever reason, when the child is there, you're not sure whether, you know, I don't know. I want to be extreme. Maybe Mwanoja KFC only. I don't know. I'm just being, you know, I'm trying to make a point. And you are uncomfortable. Or maybe let's say it's a house where there's just a lot of traffic, you know? And when you think this traffic is not good for your child, people in and out, maybe lots of alcohol, whatever the case may be.
No, actually, yes.
And you are uncomfortable, and you then come to the conclusion, or the child comes back to tell you things that you've never known about what happens there. And you come to the conclusion that it's not in his best interest actually to spend, let's say it's a weekend there. Tabi saying, what is she supposed to do? Must she then go back?
Yes. You can't unilaterally make a decision to say, my child is not happy, my child is not this. You have to go back to the court
and apply
and say that can the contact be reduced? Instead of it being a full weekend, can it be from Saturday 9 a.m. to like maybe 5 p.m.? Stuff like that. But this obviously will... Every parenting plan has to be modified as the child grows, because the needs, interests, etc. of the child change. So if that's what ends up happening and your child reports this back to you, you take it back to the court. Social worker that was involved or a different one is appointed to have a sit down with the kid and to get an understanding what kid is going through, and then makes a report based on what the interview with the babies is. Make sense?
Yeah. For tomorrow, they did ask that I bring him with.
Yes, because he's old enough. According to the Children's Act, he's over the age of 8. I mean, Oya High School. So he has his own... opinion. So they have to take his opinion into consideration before making a parenting plan.
I think that the moral of the story in all the stages is that at every stage you want to change something, you need to go back to the court.
Correct.
All the time.
Correct.
Okay, man. Thank you so much. All right, thank you. Tabiseng, there is another message.
Okay.
This is another anonymous. And they are saying, evening, Tabiseng and Pimelo, my mother is married to my stepfather in customary marriage. And he moved out of their matrimonial house almost 3 years ago.
Okay.
And is now in a process of remarrying, I think customarily again.
Mm.
I need to understand the financial implications of shared assets, 50-50, as he's now getting another wife without a divorce. If he files for a divorce, what are the implications in terms of the assets shared, or... God forbid our mother departs without a divorce. Would the new wife be entitled to her assets? There's a place in place. I think I understand what she says. NB, my mother contributed towards all the accumulated assets. Okay.
Mm,
Stepfather was financially dependent on my mother. Okay, I get the concern.
Yeah.
So the mother contributed to whatever assets they had.
Yes.
He then moved and remarried but didn't divorce her mother.
Yeah. So unfortunately, marriage in community of property. So mom has to make an application as soon as possible to divorce him.
It's, you don't wait for him to divorce.
No.
Your mother must start the divorce proceedings.
Correct. Correct. And if he is already willing to marry somebody else, it's very likely he'll be willing to settle the matter. So settlement...
Are you sure?
Well, we hope. I can't remember, we were trying to be positive.
Because the reason I'm skeptical, he didn't do it in the first place.
Yeah.
Remember, he was financially dependent.
Yes.
And he wouldn't want to lose these assets.
So maybe he's not dependent on the other one because mom now is not maybe as financially strong as she used to be. Maybe that's why he moved on.
Maybe he just doesn't want to lose the assets that he had.
True. But with that, we still have to try and bring them around the table to see if we can settle the matter. Because if we don't try to settle the matter and we go straight for a divorce,
what would be the best way to settle it?
It would literally sit them down to come to an agreement to say, I'm keeping this, I'm keeping that, you can keep this, you can keep that. We put it in a settlement agreement, we make that settlement agreement an order of court.
Okay.
So we don't necessarily have to stick to the letter of the marital regime we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So we are dictating to the court how we want to be divorced.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm keeping the house and the car. You can keep whatever you have, more LinkedIn. I'll keep my debts. You keep your debts. Let's part ways. Settlement agreement, remunerati, people move on. But if it's going to be a fight where, no, I want this, I want that.
No, I want 50% of everything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So everything also includes the debt. So people tend to forget that part. So if he wants 50% of everything, it includes the debt. So he must also pay and contribute towards her debt. And she too will have to do the same. And if she was the stronger financial person, her debt clearly is going to be a lot more versus him.
We once spoke about the issue of maintenance.
Yes. So he may also want spousal maintenance.
This is it.
Because clearly he was dependent on her.
Mm-hmm.
But if 3 years have passed without him being dependent on her, we can argue to say that he doesn't need the money. He can't prove for the past 6 months.
He didn't survive.
Yes. So as a result, he doesn't have a claim for spousal maintenance. So that can also always be argued.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Tabisa, where do people get hold of you?
So people can get hold of us by sending us an email on info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za or calling us on 087-265-8010, sending us a WhatsApp on 079-654-7523.
All right. Thanks, Tabisa. We'll see you next week.
Next week.
All right, folks. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.